Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 139 for January 28th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm unfortunately Buddy Brannon.
Well, not
unfortunately
so unfortunately
for you, maybe, but yeah. We're happy that you're Buddy Brannon.
Well, I'm happy to be Buddy Brannon. Unfortunately, I'm inflicting myself upon the masses again. Again, for the second time in several days.
They can take it. Yeah, that's a good point. By the time they hear this, there should also
Triple
be
click
a new
will be
episode.
Out.
Yes, indeed. Yes. With some good stuff, some interesting stuff, some very important stuff. So you want to be sure and listen to that that podcast. Well, speaking of important things, our lead story this week has to do with unlocking cell phones, or perhaps
not
the inability
cell phones
to do such a thing. Yeah, exactly.
See, I got to agree with everybody saying that this has got to be something promulgated by the cell phone carriers. I mean, why would they do a complete 180 on this?
Yeah.
It's a little bit bizarre to me, and maybe I'm just, maybe I don't hang with the cool kids or something, but I don't know that many, I don't know what else to say, standard consumers, I guess,
right,
who unlock their cell phones themselves. I don't know how many people among the masses know that you could do this. At least not that many people knew about it before. Now, as right. This is in the news, people are going to, hey, wait a minute, you're taking away this right to do this thing that I never even knew existed. What's going on?
Well, you know, but 3 years or so ago, the Librarian of Congress actually said that you can unlock your cell phones and actually made that very explicit. I think it might have been the same time that the Librarian of Congress also said that jailbreaking was okay. And ironically, jailbreaking is still okay. So
yes.
Why would jailbreaking be okay, but unlocking not okay? I don't really understand the logic there.
It makes very little sense. And they say, let's clarify, this is, you can't unlock your cell phone yourself legally, but you can ask your carrier to do it. And supposedly carriers will. Certainly with Verizon, the iPhone 5 ships unlocked by default. And AT&T says, at least today, we'll see how this changes, that yeah, they'll unlock your phone if you're out of contract.
Sprint will unlock your phone for international use also. Well, your iPhone anyway, or whatever, perhaps a multi-mode capable phone, if you've been a customer in good standing for at least 3 months.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Even though I think this is something I would like to do, I haven't had a need to, so I haven't really been very motivated to call Sprint and ask them, can you unlock my phone, please?
Well, Ricky, I think you make a good point that the masses probably didn't know such a thing existed. Blind people have been doing it for a while, especially back before more accessible smartphones with the old Nokia phones and that sort of thing, and putting screen readers on them, all that fun stuff. But yeah, I don't know if this really matters all that much to very many people.
I think I just dislike the idea that they're doing it. Whether or not it affects me personally, it makes very little sense.
That's kind of my feeling on it.
Yeah.
Well, something that was a little more important to many of us this week was the absence of Twitter for a rather extended period of time, actually.
I almost stopped breathing.
I know.
It was horrible.
It was.
I would have been very panicked had I been logged into Twitter at the time.
It's kind of interesting, their explanation, in that it's just, it was a bug.
There was a bug and something fell over and it took out a bunch of other stuff.
It cascaded and made a bunch of other things falling over. Yeah.
And we're really sorry, and we know that Twitter is very important to y'all, and we're going to try not to let that happen anymore.
And we done fixed it, and we're taking steps so that it don't get broke again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
In that,
well, I
in
think
that
they just wanted
way.
To be really clear that, no, we didn't get hacked. For real, we didn't get hacked. No, seriously, uh-uh. There
we,
was no hacking.
We did not get hacked. Hacking did not occur.
And all of the flood of tweets from the inauguration didn't have anything to do with it either, maybe, or maybe not, or
interesting.
Who knows? Yeah. Well, how about MSN Messenger or the lack? This kind of the lack thereof, maybe the podcast title. Who knows? I don't know. No more on iOS.
Nope.
Yeah, at least not
through an MSN
client.
Official
right.
app.
Right. I'm using IM Plus. Which,
yeah, I've got
although,
IM Plus.
Did you guys look at the comments on the article where everybody started getting all pedantic and saying it's not MSN, it's Windows Live Messenger, but no, that doesn't roll off the tongue. And there was this big argument about branding the Messenger client, which is
I didn't look at the comments.
Anyway.
I don't know. Whenever I look at comments, they usually make me angry. And so, you know, especially on stories that involve, you know, disabled people or some sort of discrimination, or so-and-so got kicked out of somewhere because of their guide dog, and then somebody says something stupid and makes me angry. So,
yeah. And as you're making this fun little transition from MSN or WLM or whatever you want to call it to Skype, you may or may not want to merge your existing contacts into Skype. So if you've got old MSN contacts, whenever you load Skype, there is a button to log into Skype using your Microsoft account. So if you want to do this merging, you can choose the option in Skype to log in with your Microsoft account, and then all of your MSN contacts or whatever you want to call them will then become a part of Skype and Skype Chat and all that happy stuff as well.
Well, something that we are going to get soon, apparently, is the Windows Surface Pro, which hits the U.S. and Canada on February 9th. Only going to set you back a mere $899 for the 64-gigabyte version, or why not add $100 and get the 128?
You can add a whole bunch more and get one of the smart covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like $130 for a smart cover, but this comes by default with something that I don't entirely understand what it is, a palm-resistant stylus something or other. I don't know what palm-resistant means, but...
Maybe it doesn't like things that run on Palm OS?
Palm OS? Yeah, that was my first thought, but this
maybe
thing...
Maybe it doesn't like coconuts? I don't know.
Whatever this thing is, the stylus thing, it can magnetize to the tablet, and it comes with one of these by default.
Maybe it's marketing for, it's not a capacitive touchscreen, it's a resistive touchscreen that requires a stylus, and so if you touch it, it won't activate anything.
Maybe so, but they were talking about the stylus itself being palm resistant, which made very little
sense.
Oh
yeah, well, you know, that's more sloppy journalism maybe.
I'll go for that. In any case, we can find out soon.
We've got lots of sloppy journalism in this issue of Sarah Talk Podcast.
Man, that sure seems to be a trend, doesn't it, honestly?
It does,
sadly,
and it bothers
yes.
me.
Yeah. It's like people write articles kind of the way you would write a quick chat message. Although
right,
I'm
just waiting to see a text speak in there.
It's probably coming, yeah, seriously.
Well, like the one
Surface
that we're going to have.
Surface tablet number 4, letter U.
Yeah.
Right. TABL3T. TAB13T.
Yeah. T at B.
T at B13T.
There you go.
Wow. Well, you're going to have a little more money to spend on this Surface Pro because according to certain articles, you may not be spending as much money or any money on a PC in the future. I actually like this article by John C. Dvorak from PC Magazine.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much nailed it.
Yeah, I do too. Which talks about the fact that this is actually more a meme for the fact that we've reached the saturation point of PCs, which I really didn't realize was predicted in 1993.
Well, it's funny because I'm not sure I knew that it was predicted in 93. I do remember, though, sometime in the 90s watching one of these computer shows and it said something like, oh yeah, desktops are going away. Everybody's going to, you know, have laptops, and laptops are getting cheap enough that they're just going to replace desktops and that's what people are going to use. Well, that didn't happen really until, you know, real recently.
Yeah.
In fact, my main computer is now a laptop.
And I think now the idea is, no, the PC isn't dying or going away. It's just not going to get much better or much different. So people may buy replacements for it and use tablets
but not as
and
often.
Things like that. Yeah, but not as often, and just use tablets and things like that for all their everyday stuff. And the PC's not going anywhere. It's just that it's, what's the word I'm looking for? It's standard. It's something that people have and don't really care about, like a stapler. You know, everybody has one, but you don't get all excited when new ones come out.
Well, like a TV, right? Like a TV set or a, you know, some kind of appliance like that, washer and dryer. You get one and you use it for a long time. It's not, you know, there's no, any incremental changes in technology aren't going to be so monumentally radical, huge that you're going to need to immediately run out and buy a new one. Now, they say, well, you know, software isn't really keeping up with the hardware anymore. Please don't say that.
No.
Please don't say that, because already we have enough sloppy coding and sloppy software that's just huge, because people don't have to be careful, because memory and hard disk space are so cheap that you don't have to count every byte anymore. So, like, software is big and huge and bloated, and it will continue to be big and huge and bloated because nobody has to care. And so it'll be, you know, so what? We don't want to encourage people to make software more big and huge and bloated and slower to load to take advantage of faster computers so that we don't notice the difference. Please don't do this.
I'm with you.
Well, Lenovo's kind of hedging their bets a little bit on this whole discussion, just in case maybe things really do slow down in a major way. They're willing to consider buying RIM.
And the funny thing about that is I didn't know that RIM was actually on offer at all.
I didn't either.
They may not be, per se.
Right.
But
so it's like we make this theoretical thing. Well, if RIM were available for sale, would you buy it? Oh, me, I'd buy it. Well, okay.
We might offer it then.
So let's make a news story out of that.
It is interesting that Lenovo, one thing I didn't know is that Lenovo makes tablets.
Yeah.
I've never seen a Lenovo tablet, so I had no idea that they did anything.
Well, like last year they did. Oh no, last year they had tablet at CES. Even they had tablets, and they had the convertible thing that was like a notebook, and then you took the top of it off, and it was the screen turned into its own little self-contained tablet.
Ah, okay. Well, good for you.
So, like, they're doing interesting things, sort of, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess their plan, if there is any kind of plan, and this isn't just complete rumor and hearsay, I guess their plan would be to do something with the BlackBerry Playbook, which really never went anywhere. And of course, RIM's going to have this new, you know, the latest OS. So they may turn the Playbook into a really cool Lenovo Ultrabook running BlackBerry OS. Or they may do nothing at all.
Yeah, could be.
This is true. But Google's doing some stuff, like maybe ditching passwords for some sort of an NFC replacement. Is this like a keychain? Is that what I'm understanding?
Dongles for everybody.
Yeah, and you can call me an old fuddy-duddy if you want, but I'm a little freaked out by this. Maybe it's because I can carry my passwords around in my head, but the idea of having this stuff on some little device that I'm likely to lose.
Yeah, or somebody might lift it from me,
or somebody
could clone it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
But they're just in probably the alpha stages of this right now, really.
Right, we're not going to see this anytime next week or something.
Right.
There's YubiKey or YubiKey. I'm not sure which is the appropriate pronunciation, but they're these tiny little dongles that what you're supposed to do is swipe this near an NFC-enabled device, and it'll transfer the appropriate password for whatever service you're using. So Google has gotten a modified version of Chrome, and they're testing this with some users on their own services, of course. And they do acknowledge that, yeah, if we get this working, then other sites are going to have to support it too, but they're developing what's supposed to be a fairly easy way to roll out support for this. So they're saying that passwords may not disappear altogether, but it may be something like a second level authentication for a password, whereas the initial bit of identification is whatever comes through NFC on this dongle.
See, and I think that we do need something a bit stronger than passwords, because passwords aren't, besides the fact that people use insecure passwords and use the same several passwords all the time, guilty as charged. Again, since computers are getting faster and more powerful, passwords are even more easily hacked. So I think probably we're going to be needing something.
I do like the idea of a two-factor system.
Yeah.
Sure, but I like I say, something so tied to a piece of technology that someone could either steal or you could lose, I don't know.
Yeah.
So something else for Joe to buy from Google, a possible new phone, long battery life.
You know, I'm really charging. Glad. I'm really glad that Apple isn't the only one that has these crazy impossible rumors around it anymore.
Yeah.
Because this is all this is all totally conjecture, right?
Yeah.
Like nobody's
You mean like the unbreakable screen thing that
like the unbreakable screen like yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You give this thing to the right person and they'll figure out how to break it, Patrick.
Yeah, I can break screens. Yeah.
The X phone, it's what we're talking about, it's codenamed or whatever, the X phone. I'd be really surprised if it actually comes out being called the X phone, but knowing my prediction record hovering at near 100% inaccuracy, you know, take that into account too. But anyway, it's the X phone is Google's new hardware that's being developed completely in-house by Motorola, which is now a Google company. And it's being developed completely by Google from end to end, as opposed to other Google branded phones that have been developed by third party partners and then had Google stuff put on them. So they're speculating that it's going to have long battery life and unbreakable case. And like I said, unbreakable case.
And some kind of wireless charging.
Oh, and wireless charging. I still don't understand how that works. I mean, like, what is, like, you just stick it on and it charges? Or anyway.
Yeah, I don't either, because it looks like you got to have something plugged into something.
You got to have, exactly. I mean, like, you know, Tesla's wireless power thing never came to fruition and whatever, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is just like some kind of pad or some such that you just sit it on something, maybe? I don't know. If anybody knows about wireless charging, which isn't new, by the way, so there are devices that support this kind of thing. But Google's probably doing their own version of this. I'm surprised the rumor doesn't say, oh, it's going to charge from the electrogalvanic response in your fingers or whatever.
Yeah.
The more you touch it, the better the battery life is.
Well, apparently something that isn't so speculative is the debut of the Galaxy S4 in April.
Yes.
And I guess that is to be expected. How long has the S3 been out? Anybody know?
Not very long, at least.
I think so.
It doesn't seem like very long to me. It's been at least a year, maybe slightly longer. And it has been an incredibly popular phone. So I think that it's going to become more common for things like this. Everybody always talks about, oh, the iPhone releases a new one every year, and how horrible is that? But I think other manufacturers are going to do this as well. And the Galaxy, which was such a huge success, I wonder how many people with S3s are really going to jump on this bandwagon and say, hey, I need the latest and greatest.
I guess it's going to depend on what it brings to the table.
Yeah. Well, certainly among our community, among the blind community, there's a increased interest in Android. You really starting to see it on Twitter, and we're starting to see it on the comments that we get, not only for that Android show, but other podcasts that we do as well.
Well, the accessibility is getting better.
Yeah, and that's the good news. That really is. I mean, when Pete Bosley on Triple Click Home says that in episode 13, you know, that's a significant thing. We have a new podcast actually on iBlink Radio, Android from an Accessible Point of View. Jared Jika, a.k.a. Jammin' Jerry, is doing this podcast. So many people have asked, hey, how can I learn about Android? How can I learn? And here are some tutorials and that sort of thing. And so that's one place you can go to definitely check that out.
That's, as far as we know, the second podcast devoted to accessibility on the Android platform.
Because
right. And Robert Carter also has one devoted exclusively to the Nexus 7. I don't think this one is going to be an ongoing podcast so much as a series with the number of parts as yet to be determined. But you'll want to check that one out from Dr. Robert Carter as well.
And you can always go to thatandroidshow.com or, of course, the front page of iBlink Radio as well and check out Sarah Talk's own podcast on the subject. some interesting discussions and interviews and on app reviews and all kinds of fun stuff.
And if you're getting into Android, you probably want to be aware that there is malware on the platform, and apparently it's increasing.
Be careful out there.
That's right.
We live in dangerous times.
This article says that the number of malware threats, so distinct malware threats, could reach the 1 million mark by year's end. Some of these are trackers. Some of them actually try and steal data. And so there are all sorts of, you know, scary things to watch out for. And I think that's going to be true really for any platform as it becomes more and more popular. It seems that the PC is certainly not the main target anymore. We're seeing this kind of stuff happening on Macs and smartphones. And hopefully if you have a home automation system, we're not going to see malware there for a little while yet.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
That would be interesting.
But the nice thing about Android that Android does when you install anything, it tells you exactly what it's going to access and asks you to basically confirm that that's okay. Of course, the catch to that is you actually have to read that.
Yeah, you got to pay attention. And I'm not sure how many of us do that, even those of us who are aware.
Guilty as charged again.
Yeah. You click the agree button and go on, and in which case you could get what you deserve for that.
Coming up after the break, RIM, AT News, and more, right here on the Serotalk podcast number 139.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 139. And you know, the RIM Death Watch has been going on for so long on this podcast. Maybe it's time to just say that RIM was in cryogenic suspension or something for a while. They weren't dying. They were just kind of frozen in time for a bit.
Yeah, that's, I like that.
But they're really trying to make a comeback. And one of the ways in which they're doing that is they're going to basically rebrand their app store as BlackBerry World, and it's not going to just have apps. You're also going to have music and video content coming to that store soon. And this
that
is interesting to
awful
me.
Awful familiar.
Well, it does, but it's interesting because BlackBerry has always been known for doing such an incredible job in the enterprise space, and I feel like now, for good or ill, they want to be putting content into the hands of their users. They want to entertain them and so on, just like all the other platforms. And again, I don't know if this is a good thing or not, because they did enterprise and did it well. And I guess I'm afraid that if they try and take on things in this content space as well, it could be it could go badly.
Just because RIM says they're not dead, you don't have to take their word for it. Apparently Samsung must kind of think that as well, or at least they're not taking any chances, because they've launched an ad already that kind of takes a swipe at BlackBerry. I don't know what you guys thought of this, if you had a chance to look at it or listen to it. It's okay. I mean, it's not the most stellar ad I've ever heard, but it's kind of
Wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't too bad.
Right.
And it was just, I think it sends an interesting message, and maybe Samsung wasn't so smart to do that. People may have been ignoring RIM for a while, and now if Samsung comes out with something that's kind of pointing at them and saying, we're better than you, people may sit up and take notice and go, oh, Samsung thinks RIM is competition now. Maybe they are.
Let's see what RIM has to offer here that Samsung is concerned about.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be too much longer before we find out what's going to go on there. At the end of January, we're going to see this. And RIM is already rolling out some things that are going to assist in its keeping its business customers and getting them ready for this transition. They have some tools that are going to help the people responsible for managing all these devices in the enterprise space. They've got these tools that are going to make that easy and make the transition easy. And there are some other things here that RIM is doing that could make it a lot easier to have the same device at work and at home, because you can have a work-specific profile and the business has its own custom app store where they can not only push the apps that they want you to have, but they have others that you may not have to install, but you can go to this custom app store at work and get them. And then the device can have a home profile, and that's where you would use all the music and videos that you get from BlackBerry World, as well as any other apps that you want.
That could actually be really useful.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice concept. I hope it works as well as it seems in theory.
Yeah, and I'm really going to be interested to see just how well they continue their work on accessibility with the latest phones. That's, and you know, will it support all phones, or will all phones support accessibility? I guess it's my understanding that it should, if I understand our discussion with Stuart from several months ago. But again, we'll just have to see. You know, one of the things that's interesting about doing this podcast, and I think I've said this before, is when you're putting stories together, you think you know how everything's going to shake out and how everything's going to look, and you get your lineup all ready. And then something pops up on Twitter and you realize, oops, we get to do a little rearranging and changing here. And that's kind of what happened yesterday as we record this, because word popped up on Twitter that Amazon has purchased Ivona.
Oh, see here, this is more sloppy journalism.
Okay.
More sloppy journalism, because this headline says dictation could be coming to the Kindle.
Yeah, and I did read this, and mm-hmm. they actually use dictation in that sense in the article. You know, they say you can have books dictated to you. And I'm wondering if it's sloppy journalism or if it's that we in the AT business think of dictation as you speaking to the computer and not vice versa. And it may be that
not really. I mean, like, you know, when, for example, some executive dude is writing his letters, his business correspondence and so forth, he dictates to a dictaphone or to a secretary who then transcribes. So I don't know. I think that dictation is used incorrectly in this sense, because when I'm having a book read to me, I'm not having it dictated to me. I'm having it read to me. I'm not doing anything with it. Point. I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I think sloppy.
So this brings up a lot of questions. First of all, I mean, will we be able to control the Kindle with our voice? Will all books be read back to us? And if so, what level of navigation will we have in said experience?
I'm not holding out a bunch of hope here. Well, first of all, Ivona is not a speech-to-text company.
Right.
Right. They don't do anything in that respect.
Right. Right. It's specifically speech synthesis and text-to-speech. As far as the other things, given Amazon's track record so far, I'm not believing anything until I actually see it.
I'm very curious, though, in that case, why Amazon felt the need to purchase Ivona. Clearly, they want to do something with this.
Somebody said that they were actually using the Ivona voices for the current implementations of the voice guide and of
the touch interface. Right. On the Kindle Fire, you have the voice guide and the read aloud capabilities, whatever you want to call that, for the books. And it would seem that accessibility is problematic at best on these Kindle Fires, but whatever is there is using the Ivona voices. So they've already taken that step. Ivona was a smart move. They support a pretty extensive number of languages. And so if Amazon is doing some internationalization and they want to be able to support as many languages as they can, yeah, that's cool. But again, they've already used this in the current version of the Kindle Fire. So what is the next step? What are they planning to do with Ivona that is so big or so different that they needed to purchase the company rather than just continuing in a partnership with it?
Yeah, I wish I knew. But like I say, just from their current track record, I'm not holding out a lot of hope for accessibility for us on this as being anything that's going to improve with the acquisition. Now, having said that, I want to make it very clear that I love Amazon. Mm-hmm. I think Amazon's fantastic. I think that they've done an excellent job with their website. They use headings in a way that makes sense. I use the regular Amazon website, not the accessible one. And I do a lot of shopping on Amazon. I love them. I think mm-hmm. they do a fantastic job for the most part as far as accessibility goes. However, it almost feels like Kindle is a completely separate company.
It really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I have this naive little dream, having met and worked with a couple of guys from Ivona. They're a fantastic company as well, and they're very dedicated to doing what they do and doing it well. And they work well with the blind community, and they understand accessibility beyond just making text to speech. So I would like to think that as Amazon has acquired them, even if they didn't acquire them because of accessibility, I'd like to think that the guys at Ivona will share some of the wisdom that they have with the Kindle division of Amazon, and we can see some good come out of this.
I would love to be wrong about this more than anything. I would love to be wrong about this. I would love for this to contribute to my near 100% inaccuracy rating.
I was going to say, need to predict that nothing will change, and therefore everything will change.
Exactly. Right. And that would actually make me very, very happy.
Well, moving on right directly into AT, we have a new update for iBlink Radio version 2.0, and that supports the iPhone 5 and continues the great track record that it has. You can obviously connect to SamNet and use the features there.
You've got bug fixes.
To content, bug fixes, yep. Always bug fixes, yep.
And supporting it in landscape mode now, which is great.
Yeah. It's nice to be able to listen to a podcast and, you know, be able to resume where you left off. That's a cool feature. Because if you're like me, sometimes you get busy and you need to stop, especially if it's one of those like 2.5 hour Android shows where they take a long look at the Nexus 7, you know.
I like being able to browse users forums on SamNet with the iPhone, because sometimes I'll just be waiting somewhere and there are forums that I need to catch up on, and I don't have a computer with me, so I can just do that on my iPhone and look at any SamNet stuff that I've subscribed to and catch up on that.
You can look at documents that may be on DocuScan Plus, read some of those.
That's right. I use that feature very frequently, actually. There are a lot of restaurants that don't, for whatever reason, put menus online, or they do put them online and they're in PDF. So I will scan this whole batch of menus, and then when I'm out and about and I visit a restaurant, hey, I have this whole folder on DocuScan Plus full of menus, and I can just bring up the one that I need right there.
That's a cool idea, actually. That's nice. Well, iBlink Radio isn't the only program being updated. The ACB Radio Tuner has, and the reason for that is because ACB Radio is making some changes. They've moved to a different server, added a couple of new streams, changed the name of a stream. So you have, let's see if I can actually do this. The ACB Radio mainstream that's been around for a long time. Interactive is still around. Treasure Trove is extremely popular. ACB Radio World has been changed to World News and Events. There is now a new live event stream. So when convention rolls around, that will be now the regular convention may be on mainstream. But many, many other live events are certainly on the live event stream. And then, of course, a CB Radio Cafe, which, you know, features music from blind musicians. So the sound of the streams is actually better. I you know how sometimes when there are changes, you think, okay, my mind is playing tricks on me and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But I actually sent a DM to Larry Turnbull, managing director of ACB Radio, and asked. And yes, he has made some changes that actually does improve the quality of the streams, even including mainstream. So download the tuner, give ACB Radio a listen.
And our last story before the break is a blog post that all of us on the team thoroughly enjoyed, and it's certainly well worth the read. The title of this is TouchType, and it is one of these stories that is when a person shares an experience that was sort of life-changing and talks about the struggles that it took to get there and then just how much benefit was gained from actually going forward and doing this. And not surprisingly, the subject is learning to touch type. This was by someone who lost his vision later in life, and he had never learned to touch type. And he talks about his journey, and he first meets Steve Sazen, who, by the way, hosts our monthly Saraspectives show this month in AT. And the gentleman goes in and is talking to Steve about learning computers and learning to touch type, and just the way that he presents how he felt as he watched Steve show him Mac OS and then Windows OS and then navigating through menus and dialog boxes, and his fingers are flying across the keyboard. And, you know, this gentleman is feeling incredibly impressed and then intimidated and angry. You know, who is this guy to show me all this stuff? I'll never be able to do it. But obviously from his post, he has learned to do it, and quite well.
Indeed he has, yeah. This is a really inspiring story, and it really touched Steve personally. I saw his comments, and he was made the comment that he was kind of in shock, so he didn't see that coming. But it's always nice when someone actually appreciates your work and takes the time to say thank you in a very public way.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this really was a fantastic story. And what I really liked it about it, though, was that it was just so real. I mean, he didn't pull any punches. Yes. He didn't, you know, it wasn't all roses and flowers and candy and stuff. It was, I mean, he talked about how he was intimidated and how he was angry and how he was all these things. And I mean, that just made the whole thing just, you know, real and accessible. And
yes.
And I mean, that really struck me. I thought that was fantastic.
Coming up after the break, we have the mailbag. And in this week's roundabout story, a possible reason that you might want to use bad grammar. Yes, Lisa, there really might be a reason to do that. Coming up right here on the Sarah Talk podcast.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Oh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUsKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 139. Let's open up the mailbag.
All right, it's chock full of audio files this time. Not a whole lot of emails rattling around in there, but plenty of audio file goodness. And we'll take a couple from here. The first one is from Ben in Spokane.
Hi, this is Ben calling from Spokane, Washington. I'm just calling to let you guys know that I finished listening to Sarah Talk Podcast 137. And so anyway, you guys just did an excellent job. I really enjoyed everything. that you guys had to say. I really liked that about the job interview. That was really great. And also, too, in regards to Facebook, I have found the Facebook app and iOS to be extremely accessible for me. I haven't found any issues as of yet to encounter on that. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there. And then also, too, in regards to the email that was written, I absolutely believe that free screen readers are the way of the future. I had an opportunity to play with a few Windows 8 computers this weekend, and I have to say that I was really impressed with Narrator. I really liked how Narrator read things and did things, and I use VoiceOver on the Mac full time, and I found Narrator to be a lot like VoiceOver, and I was just real impressed with it. And the thing I was real impressed with the most is that I don't have to worry about buying a $1,000 screen reader just to go along with it. I can just buy, I don't have to worry about, which one is going to work with this type of screen reader. You know, I don't have to worry about that. I can buy, you know, well, do I want, you know, a Dell or HP or, you know, what do I want? You know, I don't have to worry about such a screen reader. You know, I don't have to worry about that. You know, I just can just buy the computer and take it home and set it up and call it good. And I really believe that, as I was saying, that free screen readers are going to be the way of the future. And I really believe that mainstream technology, such as Narrator and VoiceOver and TalkBack on Android, are going to open up doors for us.
Thanks, Ben. Yep, looking at Windows 8 is certainly an interesting experience. I had to replace my son's laptop, and so now we've got a Windows 8 machine in the house. I haven't moved to that myself, but it's good to have one around. And as for Facebook, I, at least at one time, found it a lot easier to use Facebook on iOS than I did on the site itself from a PC, and it does remain pretty accessible. I don't find myself looking at Facebook as much as I used to, but I'm glad to at least be able to when I want and or need to. Next up, coming off last week's discussion about sounds, we have one from Mary Ellen.
Hi, it's Mary Ellen Earls, and you have up on Saratech in the speeches, you've got a lot of good audio, old audio content yourselves. And a couple of years ago, I was in Cincinnati at my brother's house and found a recording up on Saratech of William Howard Taft, and I played it for my brother. And what we both said simultaneously was that William Howard Taft's son, Charlie, was a very good friend of my father's. And we couldn't get over how much Charlie sounded like his father. But I've always found old audio to be fascinating as well. And, I'd like to hear a lot more of it. Keep up the good work. Enjoyed the podcast. Thank you.
Wow, that's wild, especially actually knowing Mr. Taft's son, and it seems they sound quite a bit alike. Very cool. Last but not least, we have another message about sounds, and this one comes from Jay.
Hi, guys. I'm the Sarah Talk Podcast Network. My name's Jay. I'm a first-time caller, but I have listened to several different podcasts that Sarah Talk produces, such as That Android Show and all that good stuff. But I just got done listening to episode 138, and you guys were talking about old audio and all that. I actually sort of did the same thing and still do sometimes, at least it does on YouTube, you know, where you'll find an event and you will, look at a sound for it up on the internet somewhere. I remember doing that for, I'd watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and I had been wondering for a long time what the Model T sounded like, because in the movie, you know, they have this weird sound and it's in the rhythm of the music, and sort of for the longest time, I used to think that's what the Model T sounded like because, you know, I was little and I didn't know any better. And so I really thought it was kind of neat to be able to look at sounds like that. And I used to have a collection of sound effects, and I would try and put some together, not in an audio editing project, just, you know, with a media player, you know, you set it all up in a queue and make it play. And another thing I really like to do, I have a pair of Bose OEs, not the OE2s, the original ones. I like the sound of them better. And what I'll try and do is look for binaural recordings of audio. I know that's sort of modern audio, but at least digitally it's modern audio. But stuff like that has always interested me because with these particular headphones that I have, they personally make me feel like I'm actually there, and I think that's kind of neat.
Well, Jay, I'm like you. I like to surf YouTube some along with you and Lisa. The question to the answer rather to the question I had from last week's podcast about the name of the NPR podcast was in fact Lost and Found Sound. So I found it online. I very briefly took a look at it, and it seems that maybe NPR is using some nice flash player to play the podcast. So I need to take a little further look and see if I can successfully play the episodes or not. But I will report back on that possibly as early as next podcast and let you know. In fact, I'll just go ahead and put a link to the show notes in this week, and we'll all just kind of take our chances together. How's that sound?
There you go.
Resources at sarahtalk.com. We'd love to hear from you. Leave an iReport on iBlink Radio, either using your iOS or your Android device. Certainly, you can go to sarahtalk.com, and along with looking at the show notes, you can leave blog comments. We do appreciate those very much. Go to iTunes, and while you're over there, write a review and rate the podcast. Finally, call the Blab Line, 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, 2,000 miles is a long ways to walk. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, no kidding.
It is.
Especially if you're a blind person walking the Appalachian Trail from Georgia to Maine. And you might
be doing
this.
That's not an easy walk.
No. This is an interesting story. An attorney, Michael Hansen, did this back in 2010. He used a Nokia N82 phone with Lodestone GPS, did a lot of updating of the content, the maps, and that sort of thing in order to make this work for him, and just really quite an undertaking. And I always admire people who do this sort of thing.
Absolutely. I can't imagine doing this sort of thing myself. Then again, I'm not much of a hiker, but I love the idea that he used technology and did it in such a way, you know, that these maps weren't necessarily pre-built with all of the points of interest and checkpoints and things like that along the trail that he needed. So he had to gather all sorts of data from various and sundry different places and import it into Lodestone. He did a trial run before he did the main hike on the Appalachian Trail. And that seemed to work well, although he did find out that he needed a GPS receiver with a longer battery life. And
who knew?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This took, I think, 7 months for him to complete, and he did have to skip a portion of the trail because of some really bad weather. But the part that just made me shudder and be amazed at how brave this guy was, when he was first starting out, there was a blizzard.
Yeah.
So it basically obscured any kind of landmark or anything like that. And he had to do some interesting things that I wish were described in the article, but he had to do some things to make sure that he was actually still on the path and not just kind of wandering off into the wilderness.
The blizzard, I'd be canceling.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I could get lost in my backyard when it snows.
Well, and there was a reference to the fact that, you know, he could use audible cues to, like, figure out where campsites were, not just audible, but other cues as well. I'm like you, Ricky. There's a lot more to this story that I would be interested in knowing about, that whether he would write about this and more extensively, or maybe we
need to
visit with him at some point or something. Yeah, that would be very, very interesting to know just how he went about this, but. Excellent. Finally, in our last story for this week, why bad grammar makes good passwords. So if you use a passphrase, which probably many of us do, I mean, it's kind of hard to come up with just the random upper and lowercase letters and numbers and then actually remember such a thing. Yeah.
It's even hard to do when you come up with a phrase to remember it.
It is.
Remember, yeah, like, which phrase where did you capitalize? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody I know actually, in fact, does something kind of cool, and I've sort of started adopting it myself. He uses contracted Braille to make his passwords.
Oh, very nice. I like that idea.
So GRT would be great, I suppose. I mean, that sort of thing. It's an interesting idea.
Or like even, of course, that means that you have to know know computer Braille, right? Because then you have to know which symbols correspond to which grade 2 contractions.
Very interesting. But so passphrases, like, for example, the big boy runs fast, aren't particularly good passwords. I think I would have probably known that.
Exclamation point, B-I-G.
Really. But if you choose to be, and the reason is because these password cracking software are smart enough to know, hey, if you use the word the, or, you know, then you might be going to use a sentence or whatever. It's able to figure out the first word you might use, and then it's a little easier to come up with maybe the next one. So if you did something like the whippersnapper, whipper, WHIPPOOR, snapper, or my favorite one would be flipper, flopper, flittle, flattle. That would be a good password. So, yeah.
Flittle, flattle. Hey, isn't that a snack food? No, wait, that's fiddle, faddle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. I would use flipper, flopper, flittle, flattle for a podcast title, but I'm not sure how Eloquence would read it, and people might think that we had completely lost our minds. So... But then they may think that anyway.
We had them in the first place.
Right. Yeah. That does make the assumption, doesn't it? Yeah. Good point.
I don't know, though. Using bad grammar to create the passwords, I don't know if I could live with myself. I'd cringe every time I typed it in. It makes perfect sense.
How about bad grammar combined with grade 2 Braille?
Oh, I like it. I like it a lot. What are your secrets to cracking or to making good passwords? Pass them along and give them to us and... We will use them, and then they won't be secret anymore. So, well, before this degenerates any further, I think we should probably bring this to a close. I'd like to thank Ricky and Buddy for joining me this week, and I'd like to thank all of you for listening. As always, Patrick was going to tell you how to get a hold of us at the very end of the program. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Seratalk. Visit us at www.seratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@seratalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.